It's now time for The Sit Down with Don Tony.
The Sit Down, where Don Tony talks one-on-one with his followers.
What are you looking at?
About the world of pro wrestling, pop culture, and so much more.
The Sit Down with Don Tony.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
All right, good evening, everybody. July 23rd, 2023. Welcome to the Sit Down. It is Sunday night. I am Don Tony. As always, I want to thank you for joining me, whether we are live or in the archive. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. Weekend is almost over, but we have a fun next hour or so to talk about whatever is on your mind, wrestling, non. For those that are new to our Sunday format, it's simple. It's the laziest show that I do. I come here with no topics planned. Basically, everybody who is live, everybody who is in the chat, set the stage as far as what we talk about tonight. If you're in the chat, you get to choose whatever topics you want me to discuss, any comments you want me to share, just post it in the live chat and we will talk about it. As always, super chats are not required. They are very much appreciated and normally they help pay the bills. But for this weekend, a little support from the family. Any super chats that we generated yesterday, the 22nd on the Don Tony Show, and tonight, all of it goes right to the GoFundMe for Shotzi Blackheart's sister, Shawnee, who is battling liver cancer. A lot of expenses, a lot of additional expenses involved, and there's a nice GoFundMe set up right now. It's only about two-thirds of the goal. And I tell you, I'm a little bit surprised on the sluggishness of it. It was opened in January or February, you know, for those that don't know. A lot of news reporters that are posting it now are posting it, you know, because Shotzi shaved her head. If she didn't shave her head, they wouldn't have posted anything. But once it was posted, it did double as far as donations go. But when you look at it and you see that only 355 people in the world have contributed, when you take away friends, you take away family, and you take away fellow wrestlers, you know, that is a very small number. But look, if it's within your means and you want to donate directly to that page, I created a tiny URL link to make it easy to remember, tinyurl.com/helpshotzisis. So if you want to do it directly, if you do it here, once the show is over tomorrow, I will go on the GoFundMe and we will donate it. You will see my name there, Anthony de Blasi, and every penny will go there. So don't feel obligated, but, you know, anything that comes in, much appreciated. And whether we were doing this or not, any super chats that come in always get VIP priority. It's only fair. And some of you sometimes will send them before the show goes live. Sometimes somebody wants me to research something, wants me to prepare myself for something. And sometimes people just want to be, you know, early to the game. So we have one that we're going to kick off with. And then once we're done with super chats, we'll go right into the live chat room. So, without further ado, we got a super shout out to Sticky Fingers Frank. What's up, Frank? Thank you for the 10 spot. Hello, DT and family. A quick question. DT, your thoughts on Billy Gunn leaving his boots in the ring during Saturday's Collision? I saw it. Believe it or not, I was actually this close to going live yesterday because it was in Jersey. I had a few friends of mine that were going. They're like, hey, why don't you come? And I'm like, you know, I wasn't prepared. I got things to do, you know, stuff I got to do this morning. So I ended up not going. But I did see the segment with Billy Gunn leaving his boots in the ring. My honest opinion, they ain't no way We saw Billy Gunn's last match yesterday. I see this coming down to one of two things. Either he's taking a break and is not going to be wrestling in the ring anytime soon, or he's turning heel. And he is going to swerve the Acclaimed and ultimately join back with his sons, and we go from here. Even if his AEW in-ring career is over, the guy is in too good a shape to not want to do an indie show and get a nice little payday out of it. Or down the line, go back to WWE, and who knows? There ain't too many members of D-Generation X left that could actually do something in the ring. So do I think we've seen the last of Billy Gunn in the ring? No. Maybe for the time being, but either he does it again in the future for WWE or outside of AEW. Maybe we saw the last of his AEW in-ring work. My gut feeling tells me that this is a swerve. Ain't no way that guy retired. Uh-uh. He still got it. And yes, you got to ask yourself, when do you pack it up? When do you hang it up? But, you know, the guy, he's doing great. And he doesn't wrestle that often. You know, he could still move. Unless he's got a surgery coming up that is going to put him on the shelf for a very long time. Maybe that could be it too. But my gut tells me you don't pass up paydays. And I think that there's something bigger involved with this. That's my gut feeling. I know a lot of people online want to get lost in the storyline, the feeling like he retired and thank you, Billy. And yes, thank you, Billy. I mean, he's been wrestling since what, 1989, 1990? Around, that's a crazy amount of time. So, you know, I appreciate what he could do, but I don't think that's the last. Nah, I don't feel that way. But thank you, Frankie, for that one. I see another one came in. Rizzo with 10 spot. Thank you, Rizzo. Much appreciated. Hello, DT in chat. I'm just curious if I watched the Abdullah the Butcher, Dark Side of the Ring. In my opinion, neither Abby nor Devin Nicholson, Hannibal. Oh, that's my Brian Last impersonation of Hannibal. Oh. Devin came off great in it. Devin may have even... Neither Abby or Devin came off great in it. Devin may have come off even worse. Listen, Hannibal's a nut job. I really don't focus on him much anymore because he's just too much of a whack job. We've been talking about that guy for over a decade. And, you know, without... I'm not doing this to name drop, but anybody goes back with me to the mid-2000s, I used to be friends with Bison Smith, Ring of Honor guy who worked Japan and worked events with Hannibal. And he used to tell me that Hannibal used to bleed in a lot of other matches. They just, because nobody gave a shit about Hannibal, nobody really paid attention to it. And Bison Smith told me that nobody believed that Hannibal got the hepatitis from Abdullah the Butcher. And then, unfortunately, Bison Smith passed away way too young. I think, how old? Not even 40? So, honestly, Hannibal's just a whack job. I stay away from whack jobs. He's a whack job. The Abdullah the Butcher, you know, the funny thing about it is, and yet, listen, I'm not going to deny it, the shit that I did in indie wrestling was caca. But the first ever, televised debut of me doing something on camera for indie wrestling, I technically managed Abdullah the Butcher. How crazy is that? The first time you ever saw Don Tony in front of the camera for an indie wrestling event, that was the night that I stapled the money to Louis' head in the middle of the ring, and I was cursing out fans in the crowd. You couldn't get a girl wet if you jumped through in the pool. Remember that shit? I managed Abby that night. How crazy is that? I mean, he had his handler, but pretty cool. Some people don't believe it. Next week, I'll show you the video. How's that? I backed my shit up. I'll show you the video next week. So we'll. I'm not going to put it in the scenario. Maybe I will, but you know, I'm not going to make a big thing about it. It's wrestle crap more than anything else. But I thought it was funny. You know, like people were ragging on me. Like, who's this fat Guido? you know, think he is. He thinks he's a personality. And I just, when people were shitting on me around ringside and I'd never been on camera before, I just started thinking of insults people, I used to hear people say, or people used to say to me. So I saw some guy, and he was with his girlfriend, and I said, you couldn't get a girl wet if you threw her in the pool. And just started doing, and the rest is history. But I will say this, the Dark Side of the Ring, Abby, sucked. It sucked. You know, this season's Dark Side of the Ring, I haven't watched them all, but I've watched quite a few of them. Out of all of them, probably the Adrian Adonis one I might have liked the most. And the Adrian Adonis one, it's like, was that really worthy for a Dark Side of the Ring? Yeah, he did coke. Yeah, he drank. Yeah, he got extremely fat. You know, but a lot of other people, you know, because he got fat. Compared to everybody else, he got fat. You know, like, it felt like, oh, they were enamored about the Dan Spivey fight. They did they were too focused on one thing. Abdullah the Butcher was in his 60s, if not 70s, when the accusation came from Hannibal. How the fuck do you take his career that goes from the late 60s up until the early 2000s before there was any Hannibal thing, and because of one accusation, they make a Dark Side of the Ring out of it? Abby's life and career was not Dark Side. I thought the episode, I don't want to say it was garbage, because seeing a little vintage Abby is a good thing. But honestly, Dark Side of the Ring, from 1968 to 2007, Dark Side of the Ring, the fuck out of here. Honestly, and that's why their ratings are as bad as they are. Because people are watching like, you know, really, it seems like they're pleasuring themselves. You know, look, Abby gets a little payday out of it, some wrestlers. You know, it's not 100% garbage, but most of it is like, you did all that work for that? So that's my honest opinion on it. And Hannibal is a whack job. So thank you, Rizzo. Thank you. Okie dokie. You know, I don't know who it was earlier, but I saw a question come in that I definitely want to acknowledge, because it's definitely something that will float around over the weekend, if not next week. Yeah, I got it in front of me. It's from We Rally Sport Ali One. No, We Rally Sport One. I think I got it right. Hi, DT. Question: your thoughts on stairs in wrestling entrances? Sky Blue on the Ring of Honor pay per view did a run in and save and stumbled down the steps. She could have hurt herself and injured. My thoughts on it. No joke. I have a wrestle crap moment that I have been too lazy to send to Botchamania. I don't want to say who the wrestler is because I know for a fact the footage is not online. I want to make sure my show logo is in the corner so I get a little credit for it. All I will say to you is that a wrestler that some people classify as a Hall of Famer who's still wrestling today, back in the mid, I would say 2007, 2008, around that time, I worked an indie show in Queens, New York, and this wrestler was on that show. And he came out and fell down a flight of stairs. Everybody was laughing at him. And this guy is an intimidating motherfucker. You do not laugh in this guy's face. That's all I'm going to say. He's a former Ring of Honor guy, and he's legit. He is absolutely legit. But I have footage because I worked the show, and I got footage because, you know, I was financially involved with the show, so I had every right to own the footage. He fell down a flight of stairs, and his ultimate botchamania. I've just been too lazy to put it together. I have the footage in my computer. I will post it soon. But I'll say this. Stairs in wrestling are fine for entrances. I will tell you that the wrestler that I'm talking about that fell and Sky Blue, they do have something in common other than being human beings, is that they sped up. You don't use the steps to run in or walk to the ring fast. This person that I saw that fell down the flight of stairs, he was not just doing his regular entrance. He actually seemed like he was a little bit speeding it up. And especially when you have wrestlers finishing matches and they're sweating and you're going up and down, you got to be really fucking careful. It's a shame it happened to Sky Blue. You know, we've talked recently about Sky Blue, you know, hitting the ring with a chair to make the save against the Outcasts, and she's slow. It's like a record that's, well, records don't, people don't use them anymore. But you know when something's a little too slow? Like, it took a couple extra seconds for her to hit the ring. Personally, I don't think anybody should be doing run-ins from stairs. You know, you there's a way to do it. You know, let me tell you something. You're in the ring, and the music hits, and somebody comes out with a chair or a weapon or something, and that person's on the stage, and everybody's like, holy shit, it's blah, 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 blah. And the wrestlers in the ring are like, that wrestler doesn't have to run down the stairs. You go slowly. You point. You go to the crowd for reaction. You distract. Meanwhile, you're going down the steps like a normal human being. Plus, how many fucking steps were there? There weren't that many steps. So I personally think if you use steps, yeah, you could use. And let me tell you something. USA Pro Wrestling, the Elks Lodge, any of those shows that went on over there, I mean, there were steps. And honestly, I don't recall really anybody. Maybe one person might have lost their footing a little, but there were steps to walk down every single event. No issues. But you got to be extra careful when you try to do a run-in from those steps. And maybe you should have someone in between matches wiping down the steps. You know, back in, because we remember, because the towel guy. Anybody remember towel guy? Back in the ECW days, between matches, you'd have a towel guy, you know, like a teenage kid, early 20s, maybe an aspiring, you know, wannabe wrestler. And during, he would just wipe down the ropes, and he'd run fast, and everybody, and trust me, that's never been on TV, so anybody that's ever been to the ECW arena, you know what I'm talking about, towel guy. And that was designed because wrestlers are going to have matches and jump off the ropes, and you don't want the ropes to be extra slippery. I mean, I'm sure WWE does it, and AEW probably does it, but maybe you should wipe down the steps. That's my opinion. All right. Let's see. Okay, I'm just going to the chat. Tristan is asking me my favorite pay-per-view of all time. You know, as a kid, WrestleMania 3 was epic because of this, the monumental, you know, of Hogan Andre. WrestleMania 1 was great. For me, for ECW, either Barely Legal or Heat Wave 98 were my favorites. I don't, you know, like, I don't have, like, an all-time pay-per-view favorite that I go to, but those two companies, those are my go-tos, where I've watched them more than once. That's where I watched them more than once. Benjamin is asking, how chaotic, cathartic was it to see the Elite get thrown into the glass? I talked a little bit about Blood and Guts yesterday. I thought that it was okay. You know, when you see one Blood and Guts and you've seen them, we just had that, you know, anarchy in the arena. That's what was that? Like, you know, I'm kind of like numb to all the shit that they do, you know, so, you know, doing the tacks and doing the glass and doing the barbed wire, you know, especially after it's over, Kenny Omega showing respect to the Blackpool Combat Club. You know, I get it. I mean, you know, we know that in real life, there isn't this dissension between those guys. But for me, it's like when you've seen it a lot, and the participants are the same, after a while, you get a little numb to it. You know, I remember back in the 90s, 94, 95 when Cactus Jack and Terry Funk were doing their shit in Japan and FMW and stuff like that. That shit was wild. And Onita and was it Wing Kanemura and some others at the time. But after a while, you know, you watch the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. It was good. I saw Terry Bam Bam Gordy do one, which you didn't think you would see at that time. And then you'd see someone else do one. And it was different people. Like Pac, it just, I didn't care about Pac. And I'm not a big follower of Japanese wrestling. So and plus, this Blackpool Combat Club Elite thing has been going on for a very, very long time. I kind of lost interest to it. I'm not trying to be a jerk, and I'm not anti-AEW. But to me, it just did. And remember what I said yesterday. Blood and Guts was not the highest rated part of Dynamite Wednesday. In fact, didn't it score like the lowest quarter? I mean, but let's be fair. I'm not trying to clickbait. Majority of the night, the rating was steady. Got to give AEW props for that. That rarely ever happens on a Dynamite. Dynamite Wednesday, even though the rating was disappointing for some, especially with Blood and Guts, and I know it did nines, but nothing was under a nine the whole night. They knew Blood and Guts was not happening until hour two. Until hour two. But, you know, it started in nines, and it stood in nines. So people were into the first hour. This is something I've been saying for weeks now. Message to AEW, especially with Collision, get him in the door. Once you get him in the door, don't give him any bullshit to get him to change the channel, and then they get sidetracked and then they don't come back. You know, get him in the door and keep him in the door. Doesn't have to be top shelf shit. Just get him in the door and just keep them there. You know, and that's a challenge. But Wednesday's Dynamite, they did that. So, you know, look, whether the glass was fake or real, you know, I mean, personally, I'd rather it be fake. I don't want to see someone. Listen, I brought this story up many times. The first ever event that I worked for XPW was in 2002. Hostile Takeover. Terry Funk took on Shane Douglas. And I was the timekeeper at the table, the ring bell. And when Terry Funk and Shane Douglas battled to the outside, we all ran to the outside to see what was going down. And Terry Funk took a bottle and bashed it along the ECW arena and I guess was going to cut Shane Douglas with it. I think he did like kind of like simulate that he dug into his head. But for some reason, Terry Funk went like this to his forearm. And then, you know, like, I couldn't really see. But I remember Slash, even though I fought with that guy Slash, but he gave me the opportunity, and I'll always be appreciative for that. But I remember when we walked back in the arena, I looked at Slash, and Slash is like, looked white as a ghost. And went back to the commentator's table, the announced, you know, timekeeper's table. I remember Frank Talent. Anybody remember Frank Talent from Philly? State Athletic Commission. Favorite person I ever came across in the State Athletic Commission, Frank Talent. He was sitting right next to me. Terry Funk goes back in the ring, and he's like this. He's like this, and you could actually see his muscle tendon sticking out. And that was self-induced. I don't know why to this day. All I remember is that after the match was over, Shane Douglas was throwing chairs in the back, very concerned for Terry Funk, but was like, the fuck did he do that for? He wasn't trying to sabotage the match. You know, he, you know, obviously was trying to get a little blood, but he ripped his whole. My point is, that was from a beer bottle, one piece of glass. The last thing I want is anybody on TV to inadvertently cut themselves open so bad that you could have some permanent nerve damage from it. No match is worth that. No match is worth it. So they use some props that may not be. That's fine with me. That's fine with me. I don't care who it is out there. I don't want to see someone, you know, get seriously injured. No matter how. And Look at it like this. You know, Terry Funk, middle-aged and crazy. That's what we used to say. Favorite wrestler of all time. That's why he's in my backdrop. For me, he's my favorite wrestler of all time. But consummate professional. And still, look what happened. LMK. Was it like Mary Kill? Is that it? Because I know there's FMK. Like Mary Kill, I guess. Dixie Carter, Linda McMahon, Vicky Guerrero. Sorry, Linda. I don't care how big your chest was when you were in that storyline with Eric Bischoff on WWE TV. Linda McMahon never found her attractive, just being honest. Even back in the 90s during a steroid trial, never ever thought that Linda McMahon was attractive. Vicky Guerrero, I would marry Dixie Carter, obviously. So Vicky Guerrero, I can't say anything bad about Vicky Guerrero, so I'll put Vicky Guerrero on the left side of the coin. I'll use the L for victory, for Vicky. Yeah, you know, that's funny, Dream. Linda McMahon always looked like an old lady. I mean, let this sink in. Do you remember when she was in the wheelchair and she was a zombie? You know, when Trish and Vince were doing that stuff? Just imagine how much older I am compared to her at that time. Let that sink in. I'm only a couple of years away from, as we said a couple of weeks ago, I'm only a couple of years away from the same age as Coach that was in Cheers. I mean, how nuts is that? Linda McMahon always reminded me of like somebody's mother. Even in the 80s and the 90s, when we first saw her, early 90s with steroid trials, first time I ever really saw her. And I was never into her. So nothing against her, but. One fall's asking me, did I watch the Oppenheimer movie? No, I didn't. Honestly, I think the movie's about like the creation of the first nuclear weapon. I really didn't find anything that was interesting to come out of it. I think Matt Damon's in that movie. I mean, I may end up watching it anyway if she wants to watch it, but I have not seen it yet. If it was a gangster movie, like, you know, and he like screwed the Italian mob and they stuck like a nuclear weapon up his ass and lit it, then I watch it, you know. But no, I haven't seen it yet. I know a few people who have talked about it and they said that they actually thought it was decent, but I have not watched it. So Michael Gonzalez is asking, is Diesel versus King Mabel the worst SummerSlam main event ever? It's up there. It's up there. I'm not one that likes everything. I mean, you really, you know, read between the lines. I do criticize a decent amount. I liked Men on a Mission, but I was into big time hip hop back in the 80s and the 90s. And to me, it was too kiddie friendly. You know, like even when they tried to turn heel, Sir Mo, you know, like I just still couldn't get into it. I mean, when you got someone this size like Mabel, you know, like what do you expect them to do? You know what I mean? So the match was not good. And you could be right. It may be the worst SummerSlam main event of all time. I mean, we've only had a couple of dozen SummerSlams. It's not like there's hundreds. So, yeah, I think that could very well be the worst one of all time. But should Mabel have been put in that position? That's the question. Diesel, Kevin Nash, I really can't criticize because Kevin Nash was still early in his career. So, you know, putting him with Mabel... Nah, I think that was more Mabel than anything else. I don't think Mabel should have been put in that position. I mean, it's funny with the King of the Ring stuff. You know, like, that was kind of funny, and I think that was just the fact. But still, I don't think he should have been put in that position. So, Kevin Milwaukee brings up that Ed Asner, remember the Mary Tyler Moore show? I know most of you are too young for that show, but it may be late at night. Somehow it pops up on your screen, or there's like a what culture, like the top 10 fuck-ups of all time, and maybe Ed Asner's on there. Just think, Ed Asner is 48 years old on that show, and I'm several years older than Ed Asner. Like, I couldn't picture, like, if I photoshopped Ed Asner next to my wife would be like, why'd you photoshop Grandpa next to me? And I'm like, honey, I'm actually older than him. It's crazy. It's insane to go back 40 years, and 40 is 60 for back then, or 50 was 70. I always thought Coach from Cheers was approaching 70, 72, 73. Motherfucker was in his 50s. He just pointed out Ed Asner was in his late 40s. So it's pretty wild when you look back on it. But you know what the funny thing is? If you go back to the 1950s, if you ever watch footage in the 1950s, people who were in their 40s and 50s at that time, I don't think they looked much different than people in the 70s or even in the 80s to an extent. There's not that much of a difference. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the fuck changed from the 80s to now. I haven't had any plastic surgery. I mean, I had my hair done a little bit way back when, over 10 years ago. But, you know, like, how did it change that people today in their 70s look like they're 50? And I'm not talking about people who have surgery done. You know, it's pretty crazy when you think about it. All right. Yeah, medicine, lotion, better food. Better food options. You think all these people that are in their 70s look 50, always ate good throughout their life? If anything, there's more processed foods and high fructose corn syrup. I mean, you look at the food pyramid. The food pyramid, doesn't it have on there, you're supposed to have like 7 servings of bread and fruits a day? I mean, that's pretty wild, you know, when you think about it. So I'm not so sure about the better health options. Maybe less people, could it be maybe less people are smoking? And I'm not just saying that to be funny. I mean, you look back at the old days, almost everybody seemed like they smoked. And trust me, I knew people who smoked that looked a lot older than what they were. So maybe smoking is one of the biggest changes. We got 2 super shout-outs that I would like to pause and acknowledge. We got a super shout-out from Dream 101. Thank you for the 2 spot. Would I vote for Chris Christie? Depends on who he goes up against. I'm not going to lie. I liked Chris Christie more than any other politician when he first came on the scene, because that guy had the balls to tell to somebody's face when they really need to be put in place. He didn't hold back, and he did it. But once they did that toll gate, whatever it was, turnpike gate, you know, you remember what I'm talking. I started to change my views on Chris Christie. I'm not a big politician fan anymore. I don't follow politics. I keep myself aware of what's going on, but I'm not. Bridgegate, I think it was called. Something like that. Something gate. Bottom line is, I'm probably not going to vote for anybody. I've seen politicians on both sides use COVID and fucked a lot of people because of it. Both sides. COVID and a lot of the political stuff, COVID is what turned me off with politicians, because I saw people that were using it as a weapon, and I saw people on the opposite side, you know, like hiding things. So, you know, the other side looked like, you know, it was a weapon and this and that. And nah, man. I mean, I got 5 vaccinations. I look back on it, and I don't even know if I should have even gotten 1. I have no issues. If I die tomorrow of some heart defect, you know, then maybe we could, well, I won't be able to talk about it, but you guys can. Once I saw that, nah. So would I vote for him? Probably not. Just being honest, probably not. Thank you, Dream. T. Smitty, 3,000 with a 5 spot. Thank you, Smitty. And remember, everyone, any Super Chats that come in are going to go to Shawnee, Shotzi Sisters, Liver, Cancer, Recovery, you know, GoFundMe. Hope all is well, DT. We hear a lot about male AEW talent WWE may like, but not much about the women. Which AEW women would fit in the WWE if offered? Well, that's kind of tough to do on the spot because I don't have the AEW roster in front of me, but with a couple of clicks, I am there. Just quickly running it down, I think Triple H would do better with Toni Storm. I think Toni Storm definitely would go a lot further. Let me scroll down to the women, and those who identify. Athena, the former Ember Moon, I think she would absolutely do better under the Triple H regime. Britt Baker, she would have to be tweaked a little bit because, listen, I know it's sacrilegious to say this, especially because she's the fiance of Adam Cole, but Britt Baker is a little sloppier in the ring than you think, and she's more video game mode. Like, if she's going to do a move on someone, like, it doesn't look like you're improvising and reversing and telling a story. It's like, okay, I'm going to do this move. Do not fucking interrupt me while I do this move. If you ever watch her, you'll see what I'm talking about. My biggest pet peeve with the AEW women's roster are all the women that have to run the rope before they execute a move. Sky Blue does that all the fucking time. And believe me, if some of you out there never noticed that before, now you will. You will see so many women on that roster run the rope once before they go and hit their move because they need to build momentum. And it just looks too, you know, scripted. And for me, my favorite wrestling is wrestling that doesn't look like somebody's putting on an act, you know. And trust me, you know, some of the women, Toni Storm, great example, Jamie Hayter, Athena, I think they would all do great in WWE. I think Hikaru Shida definitely could do great in WWE. Jade Cargill, obviously, she still has a lot to grow and learn, but she could absolutely be a star in the future. Chris Statlander is another one, as I see. Julia Hart, potential. Sky Blue, potential. No reason why they couldn't. Nyla Rose, why not? Mercedes Martinez, a little late in her career. Marina Shafir, she's trying. But I say, no, not yet. Well, I don't know why Paige VanZant is even on this roster. She's had one match in her career in AEW. Let's see. Penelope Ford, maybe. Maybe Penelope Ford. Riho, I think she would end up the Saraya route. I think of Saraya when I think of Riho, and we see how that ended up with Saraya. I just can't buy it. Ruby Soho, absolutely. Saray. Excuse me. Saray. Saraya is Paige. Saray, that was in NXT. Riho reminds me of Saray. And I don't think that would work. Saraya could obviously make a return. Ty Mello obviously is going to have a child, so she's not wrestling right now. Taya Valkyrie, WWE dropped the ball with. Absolutely dropped the ball with. Willow Nightingale, absolutely, I think, could make it in WWE. Thunder Rosa as well. Other than that, you know, listen, there are other wrestlers that would be able to do it. The Bunny is one. You know, you could pick some others. Red Velvet. Yeah, there's some others that would be able to do it, but I see them being enhancement talent for others. The names that I mentioned are people who I think could obviously make a little bit of an impact in WWE. So that's my quick list. I might tweak it, you know, with a little bit more reflection in the future, but that's my list. So thank you for that. Brian Hunt with a 5 spot. Did I see Zilla Fatu, Umaga's son, first match with Booker T's promote? Yes, I did. I really appreciated that crowd reaction for Umaga's son. Yeah, he definitely has potential. The best way I could describe my first reaction to Zilla Fatu. Some people say Zia, I say Zilla. You say tomato, I say tomato. I say brajut. Some people say, can I have prosciutto ham? Can I have manicotti? No, it's manigot. Manigot. The best way I could describe how I felt about Umaga's son's debut is Solo Sikoa from 10 years ago. And no, I'm not talking about the TikTok video of him in the kitchen. Some of you out there haven't seen that video yet. Go ahead. Go Google it. Look up Solo Sikoa in the kitchen. Pretty funny. You look back at Solo Sikoa from 10 years ago. Potential? You would never think that he'd be in the spot he's in right now with the bloodline. Zilla Fatu definitely has a future. Definitely has a future. I Benjamin, I don't follow TikTok either. Oh, you know, I don't want to get off track, but I got to share something with you. There is an awesome channel on YouTube that looks at the top whatevers from like when it first started to the present. And I'll give you an example of one because I saw it today. And actually, it's to do with TikTok. It's the top social media companies or social media outlets from 1997 to the present. And does anybody out there remember Bolt? For some reason, I don't remember Bolt. But Bolt apparently was like the biggest social media thing in 1997. And the funny thing is, for me, MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, that's pretty much it. And what blew me away, and look it up, top social media from 1997 to the present. It'll blow your mind. And you'll binge watch the channel because of it. What blew me away is that in 2023, Twitter is not even in the top 10. And that's not, Facebook still reigns supreme. I think Facebook has 3 billion accounts right now. It's pretty wild. And another thing is, I did not realize that Reddit has been around since the late 90s. MySpace never picked up the momentum that I thought it did. You go back and you look at MySpace and you see how far down on the food chain. It never was. I always thought at one point MySpace was the king. And it wasn't even close. It's pretty wild when you go look at that. Messenger was up there. QQ. Who remember? I don't remember QQ. QQ? I'm like, I was on the forums and the message boards in the 90s. Shit, I go back to, what was it, BBS? And that's not the rims you put on your cars? Back in around 93, 94, before the internet exploded, like maybe 92, we used to go over to this girl's house and she would connect her modem and it was just all text. And you would socialize with people around the world. I think it was called BBS, something like that. I remember shit like that. For some reason, the late 90s are a complete fog for me. I mean, QQ? I don't know, QQ. Tao didn't make the list. Vine, I think, was there for a little bit. But go look it up. Pretty cool. But Zilla Fatu absolutely has a future. If he stays committed. If he stays committed. It's definitely worth a look if people want to go check that out. Thank you for that, Brian. Carmelo Falcone with a 20 spot. Thank you, Carmelo. Much appreciated. Hi, DT. You are good people. Thank you. So are you. Thank you for the generosity. Dylan with own health issues, heart-related, but cancer hits home for him. Two of his girl cousins died from cancer when they were young. One was 34, the other was 29. Each of them left behind a small child. Listen, cancer is no joke, man. Some of you may have seen my grandmother on my father's side. Not my mother's mom who got me into wrestling. She's the reason why I'm here right now. She made me a wrestling fan, you know, way back when, and I never left it. But my father's mother, if you remember the picture, I don't have the picture handy, but she was a big, burly Italian woman. I mean, she was probably maybe like 5'4", but she was big. She was like 190, 200 pounds. She was big. She intimidated you. And I watched it go from like 200 pounds to like a buck 10 in a matter of months. I've seen cancer just totally wilt people away. I've had friends gone to cancer. I had two cancer scares. My father, you know, had to deal with prostate cancer 20 plus years ago. My mom had problems with her ovaries. She had to get a total hysterectomy when she was very, very young. Cancer hits home. You know, I've lost friends and relatives to cancer. So, you know, when I see something like that for Shotzi's sister, I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. You know, whatever we send over there, a couple hundred dollars, $100, $200, whatever it is, I mean, it's not going to make a big dent, but it's just little something to just a little support here and there. You know, I hope that they find a cure, man. I mean, even, you know, Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is the one. I've been seeing that Jack Hanna. Anybody remember the animal guy, Jack Hanna? If any of you remember about Jack Hanna, go look up his story, what's going on with him right now. It's so sad. Jack Hanna was all over the TV showing off the wild animals. He doesn't remember any of it anymore. Doesn't even remember his wife. It's really scary. And that's the one that freaks me out. Cancer freaks me out too. But Alzheimer's, I can't envision me not knowing my wife or my parents or you or, you know, like forgetting everything that made me happy. You know, or I can't envision my mom and my dad not knowing who I was. You know, I could be a dick about it and say, yeah, Dad, you promised me $1 million last week. I don't remember that. Yeah, you did. I'm kidding. I'm trying to make lighthearted about it. But, you know, it's fucked up, man. Listen, let's be honest, and it's not to be downer, but cancer, Alzheimer's, it ain't going to be solved in our lifetime. But 50 years from now, yeah, I think it could very well happen. You look back, you know, 100 plus years ago, and you think about tuberculosis, and you think about, you know, their virus that they had in, what, 1929? And you see how far we've gone. Hell, I got somebody right now who has stage 4 prostate cancer. And he's going through radiation and chemo and all this other stuff. And they predict that he's going to have full-blown cure. I mean, he's going to be cured from it. It's, you know, success. My dad had prostate cancer 20-some-odd years ago. He's good. You know, me, I'm treading water right now. You know, technically I should be addressing it, but I just have blood. You want to know something? This is no bullshit. I went and had blood work done 10 days ago. Not even. Last week, we had a gigantic rainstorm. I think it was Tuesday of last week. I went Tuesday, and I got the results of my blood work, and my levels actually went down a little bit. Not a lot, but, you know, for the last 2 years, it's been going up like this, and then it just clicked down a little. So my doctor's like, you're good for now. So, you know, 6 months, we revisit it. But cancer, Alzheimer's, man, I hope they come up with a cure. I think down the line we will. Some of you are very, very young right now in your teens and 20s. I think, you know, in your lifetime, you're going to see this shit, cures coming up. I really believe that. So thank you, Carmella, for that. Thank you all as always. What time are we at? We're at 50 minutes? Okay, we still got time. All right. Rocky Red is asking me, who's on my Mount Rushmore favorite comedians? I know I'm going to end up leaving someone out, but Rodney Dangerfield is on my list. I think Richard Pryor is on my list. Man, I grew up Eddie Murphy, man. Eddie Murphy, there's so much shit that he used to do that obviously you couldn't say to these days, but Eddie Murphy made me laugh. But I don't know if I would put Eddie Murphy on that list. George Carlin, I would consider. I think, realistically, it would be Rodney, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, and even though Andrew Dice Clay is my favorite comedian of all time, obviously people feel like, you got a little dice in you. I don't know if I would put him in my Mount Rushmore. Like, see, let me put it like this. Andrew Dice Clay is like White Castle. Anybody that's ever eaten White Castle, it's one of those places that if you're up at 3:30 in the morning and you're bored, like you would consider, if you're in a good neighborhood, you would consider taking a drive to White Castle just to eat some of their burgers, even though you'll fart up a storm the next day and you'll feel like shit. It's one of those things that it just makes you go. But it's not like your all-time favorite. You wouldn't put White Castle on your Mount Rushmore. So it's like a guilty pleasure. So Andrew Dice Clay for me is more of a guilty pleasure. The fourth person, who was the one that died too early? Was it Bobcat? Was it Bobcat? No. I'm drawing a blank right now. That Bobcat is the other guy. He's still alive. Who's the one that died? He was on Married with Children that one time. He was Al Bundy's guardian angel. Oh, shit. I'm so mad right now. How did I forget his name? Someone in the chat room is going to bail me out in 3, 2, 1. Thank you, Robert Swanson. Sam Kinison. I put Sam Kinison on there. Probably because hardly anybody would. Sam Kinison was fucking funny, man. Sam Kinison was funny. He, if a lot of you don't know how he died, I think he had just finished a tour or had just gotten married, and he was on a highway, and a guy driving the wrong way hit him head on, killed him. Crazy, crazy shit, man. Sam Kinison, I probably put on my list. And the only reason why I put George Carlin on my list is because as I got older, like the shit that he said still is effective for today. So he was funny, but he also was very, very legit of what he said. I mean, like we talked about Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy, you know, we used to talk about Michael Jackson and, you know, the Honeymooners, you know, some of the other things. It was funny shit. I couldn't stop laughing. But with George Carlin, he was funny, but he was also right in a lot of the shit that he would talk about. And a lot of stuff going on today, if you watch some of his old shit, you'd be like, wow, if this guy was still around today, could you imagine? So that's, like I said, this is not a solid list, but spur of the moment, that's my choices. Why do I think WWE never did a tribute show for WCW like they did for ECW One Night Stand? Oh, I give you an easy answer for that. ECW was a style. WCW was not. WCW was a yes, ECW was a very, very tiny competitor of WWE, but ECW was a genre. You know, like, put it this way. I don't know, maybe I'm way off on this, but WWE was rock music. WWE was classic rock. WCW was classic rock. ECW was hip hop. You see where I'm going with this? Like WCW was just a different style of WWE. WWE was a different style of WCW. ECW was a whole different genre. That's why they did it. Plus, there were a lot of people in ECW that WWE did not pick up at that time. They did Invasion. Yeah, you had Mike Awesome, you had Rhino, Lance Storm, Rob Van Dam, and a few others. But at that time, they didn't pick up Sabu. They didn't pick up Balls Mahoney. They didn't pick up Axel Rotten. They didn't pick up Little Guido. They didn't pick up. So in 2005, there were enough wrestlers that WWE never really gave much attention to. And ultimately, they would sign Balls for a little while and Axel and some others. And they tried to recreate ECW, WWE's version of it. And we know the history of that. But it was a different genre. That's why it was a tribute show. It was a style. And it was something that was a lot different than what you watched on WWE and WCW. I mean, WWE had their hardcore division, and so did WCW. But their hardcore division, ECW was more than just a division. Will I watch Bam Bam Bigelow's Dark Side of the Ring Tuesday? Probably not. Probably not. And I'm not saying that I should have been interviewed for it. I want to make this clear. I'm not saying that. But I will tell you this. The Mass Maniac, if they didn't reach out to the Mass Maniac, that Dark Side of the Ring is going to be extremely incomplete, because the last couple of years that Bam Bam Bigelow was on this earth, and any of you out there, you're more than welcome to reach out to the Mass Maniac. Go on Twitter, Mass Maniac XXX. I don't talk to him. I haven't talked to him on the phone in probably 10 years. You could play this for him, and he will tell you what I'm saying is 1,000% accurate. The Mass Maniac was like this with Bam Bam Bigelow for the last 4-5 years of Bam Bam's life. And back then, there were so many things going on with Bam Bam Bigelow. We used to talk to him all the time. And Bam Bam Bigelow, if he was out of wrestling, he was clean. When he was out of wrestling, he was running a business. He had a hamburger shop. He was in Florida. He met someone else. Every time he came back to wrestling, the demons would return and the abuse would return. I was on the phone with the Mass Maniac and Bam Bam Bigelow when he found out that all the money that he was getting paid from WCW, he was sending the checks home, and his wife cleared out his bank account and left him. Came back to an empty house. He had a storage facility that had the Lawrence Taylor jersey, the motorcycle, the ECW ring, and all these other things. And Bam Bam Bigelow had me go on eBay to sell the original ECW ring. And some of you were around at that time. I sold it to somebody in Australia, and they didn't come through with the money. They flaked. And the Mass Maniac was trying to get me to give Bam Bam Bigelow $4,000 anyway. He's like, DT, you told him you sold it. I'm like, I didn't screw him. So believe me, firsthand, I witnessed it for 5 years or 4 years. And Bam Bam Bigelow wanted me to sell his motorcycle. He used to be a big fan of Brett Favre. He was a big fan of the Green Bay Packers. Guy had so many WrestleMania mementos from Lawrence Taylor, from their WrestleMania match, jersey, all his written stuff. And I told Bam Bam, I said, don't put that stuff on eBay. In one of my old hard drives, I still got pictures of everything. He sent me pictures of everything to put it on eBay. And I looked at it and I said, Bam Bam, you're not going to get anywhere near what you think you're going to get for this. And he changed his mind. Whatever happened to that stuff, I don't know. But again, I could sit here for an hour talking about the Bam Bam stuff. And the sad thing about it is, I guarantee you, none of this shit is going to show up on Dark Side of the Ring, with the exception of he used drugs, he got out of wrestling, he came back, he fell on a motorcycle, he went to Florida, he was back on drugs, and he died. That, listen, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, on this show, somebody said to me, am I going to watch the Junkyard Dog, Dark Side of the Ring? And I said, no. So, because I could already predict what it's going to be. Oh, he did drugs, and he got into fights with people, and, you know, he was hard to deal with, and then he started doing alcohol, and then he started losing everything, and then he died in a car accident. I ended up watching it, and I was like, yeah, I pretty much could guarantee that's exactly what it was. This Bam Bam Bigelow episode is going to be so fucking incomplete. Ask the Mass Maniac about this story, because I played the footage on this show. I own the footage with the Mass Maniac. The last ever Elks Lodge show, I think in 2005 it must have been at the time, the Mass Maniac wanted to reunite the Dungeon of Doom. And I said, no, you got to reunite the Triple Threat. I said, this is where ECW used to hold their shows, the Elks Lodge, the Madhouse of Extreme. You got to put some ECW history here. And the Mass Maniac, and again, all of you out there, welcome to play all of this to him, and he will tell you I'm being 100% truthful. He said to me, he says, you want to reunite the Triple Threat? All right, we're going to go with that. But you're laying out the money for Chris Candido. You're laying out the money for Tammy. You're laying out the money for Bam Bam, because they're very unreliable right now. And if they no-show, I'm not being responsible for it. I said, okay. And I paid the money for them. That's the infamous night where I was in the kitchen guarding their stuff, and they were doing their thing in the ring, and Bam Bam mooned the crowd, and they threw garbage worse than the NWO. And I played the footage on one of these episodes a year or two ago. And like I said, I could talk about Bam Bam for an hour, and none of that is going to appear on Dark Side of the Ring. I mean, imagine being on the phone with this guy, finding out that his WCW checks, after they closed down, he's sending all the money, while he's working there, he's sending all the money home. And then WCW closes down and he goes home and he comes home to an empty house and his wife left him and took all the money with her. You know, I'm sure that'll probably, but you know, it's fucked up. It's fucked up. You know, but Bam Bam taken way too soon. So no, I'm probably not going to watch it, but I'm sure people will end up DMing me and saying, DT, just so you know, they didn't talk about this, they didn't talk about that, they didn't mention this, they didn't mention that. And I know, and I kind of expect that. So I watched some of Chris Candido's Dark Side of the Ring, and I'm not going to lie to you, the reason why I did was because it was more about Tammy than Chris Candido. And once I heard that Chris Candido's brother was involved with this, then I was fine with it. Because I knew it wasn't a hit job on Chris Candido. I watched some of it. Some of it's too emotional. No, I was not a close friend with him, but I still, it's one of those, do you remember where you were? And I've brought this up many times before. I remember, I think it was the same day of a SmackDown episode, and it was around maybe 6-7 o'clock in the evening, and I was going to my friend's restaurant to drink and eat a little food. My cell phone goes off, and I answer the phone, and it's the Masked Maniac. Again, the Masked Maniac, I ask him about this, hysterically crying. And I said, what's wrong? What's wrong? He says, Chris is gone. And I was like, no. He's like, yeah, he died. And he got his ass clean. He got his ass clean, and he still died. And, you know, it's one of those moments where you're just, I'm standing in a parking lot and you get these chills. And like I said, I was friendly enough with him that Chris's brother, Johnny, wanted me in the original documentary. He said, would you come on, tell some stories? Because I have some personal stories with Chris, really, really fun ones. And I said, no. He's like, why not? I said, because, you know, people want to see the famous people. They don't want to see people like me. I said, people are like, what the fuck is this guy? So I didn't do it. I kind of regret it to this day, but I watched some of it. But you see the other people, the true friends of his, and you see his brother get emotional like that. Like, yeah. So I don't like even going to funerals. If it was up to me, I wouldn't even go to my own family's funerals or friends. It just, I don't like funerals. I don't like it. How did I like that Angelino's coffee? Matt, Angelino's pretty good, but I'm not going to lie to you. I'm kind of obsessed with this company right now. A little plug. I don't get any money from them. I don't get free coffee either. Coava. C-O-A-V-A. Coava. Got a hat from them. So that's my plug for today. Angelino's coffee is good. I got several boxes from them. The reason why I kind of go with these guys is because I grind my own beans now. I'm now heavily into coffee. I do pour overs. I do the V60s. I do AeroPress, Kalita Waves. I do all different kinds. So I like grinding my own beans. And Coava's got some, you know, I'm more of a dark roast guy, but I don't like espresso all that much. My wife drinks the Angelinos all the time because she's a K-cup fanatic. Me, I can't drink K-cups anymore. To me, K-cups taste like coffee-flavored water. I got to have something a little stronger. So, but yeah, anyone out there, Angelinos coffee or Coava? You know, definitely two recommendations. Absolutely so. C. Henry is asking, my Mount Rushmore, the original ECW roster. This I've been asked before, and I have to answer it like this. I have to do tag teams separately. You can't put tag teams on there. So I prefer to just singles guys. For me, the Mount Rushmore is Terry Funk, Tommy Dreamer, Rob Van Dam, and Shane Douglas. Don't get me wrong. I probably would put Raven either Raven or Shane Douglas in there, but Terry Funk, without Terry Funk, there's no ECW. Without Eddie Gilbert and others, there's no ECW too. But without Terry Funk, there is no ECW. Tommy Dreamer, obviously, you know, I don't need to even defend that one. He deserves it. You know, the other two, Rob Van Dam in the darker days of ECW when the roster was getting very, very thin and, you know, the name values were not what they used to be, RVD was still one of the most important parts of that company. I put Paul Heyman, but since Paul Heyman obviously is not a wrestler, I don't have Paul Heyman on there. But if you're talking about non-wrestlers too, Paul Heyman obviously has to be on there. So New Jack I wouldn't put on there. As much as I got along with New Jack and was friendly with him, and a lot of you know the history of me and New Jack, I wouldn't put him on the Mount Rushmore because New Jack was an attraction. New Jack, you know, was special attraction. He was not, you know, the glue that without him, ECW doesn't exist. There was a lot that New Jack did that you had problems with. You know, buildings were not all that happy with some of that stuff. Pay-per-view, you had to water it down a little bit. I wouldn't put New Jack on there. Wouldn't put him on there. But, obviously, New Jack, very important part of ECW. And let me say this also. The names that I gave, you know, some were very, very important behind the scenes also. The Dudleys deserve to be on Mount Rushmore, especially Bubba Ray. I mean, I put them both equally, Bubba Ray and Devon. But Bubba Ray did so much shit behind the scenes. You know, Paul Heyman, let me tell you something. Without Bubba Ray, Paul Heyman would have fucked up financially even further. You know, there's a lot of names that deserve to be on there. The fourth person, Shane Douglas or Raven, it's a toss-up. I know there's a lot of people that don't like Shane Douglas, but Shane Douglas, you know, he had a lot of legitimacy in ECW, and he really cared about the company, you know. But, all right. Bobby Means, DT, do I think that Io Sky cashes in on Asuka at SummerSlam? No, I do not. I do believe that Io and Asuka will feud. I don't want to go too deep on this yet because I haven't really thought about it clearly, but I have something that's starting to get on my mind about LA Knight. And anybody that is tuned into my shit going back to the 90s, whether you like it or not, almost everybody will admit that more times than not, I come up with these weird scenarios outside the box that end up happening. And I got this, I don't know if it's going to happen at SummerSlam, but I'm starting to get this weird vibe that WWE has plans of LA Knight winning that United States Championship sooner than we think. And I'm not saying that there's going to be a swerve at SummerSlam, but I don't think it's a guarantee that Austin Theory loses at SummerSlam. And I got this weird vibe that soon, I don't know exactly when, it could be regular TV, could be at SummerSlam, could be, I don't know. Sometime very, very soon, I think Austin Theory is going to get extremely cocky about winning a match too quickly. You might even say, oh, they did that with Jake Cargill and Chris Statlander. They've done it many times over the years. I think we could have a scenario where Austin Theory, I'm feeling good, you know, I ate town all day, every day. You know, somebody wants to come out of here. And I think LA Knight comes out there and beats his ass, becomes United States champion. I don't know, again, I haven't really thought about it yet, but it came to me and I'm like, man, I can see it happening. I can see it happening. I don't think Io Sky needs to cash in right away. I don't think she needs to cash in right away. There's still a lot of complications with her storyline with Bayley. Cashing in right now, I don't know if we really need to see that. Anthony Alston, do I look forward to Todd Gordon's book on ECW? Do you think he'll tell a story on how I bought the trademark and he tried to sue me? You think he's going to put that in the book? I doubt it. Let's see if it's in the book. You know, I don't want to bring up this story, but a lot of you, you know, if you look up the ECW trademark, you'll see my name. Just look it up and you'll see it. And then I had to abandon it because Todd Gordon threatened to sue me. So I might be interested to see if he brings that up. But I think Todd Gordon was very, very important for ECW. Very important. I mean, no matter how I ended up feeling about him, you know, in the latter years when he threatened to sue me, still, I appreciated what Todd Gordon did for ECW more than anybody will ever realize. I was a hardcore ECW fan. Todd Gordon was responsible for a lot of it. So I will not criticize Todd Gordon. And you know what? If I'm in Todd Gordon's shoes, honestly, who the fuck is this guy that tried to trademark? I mean, look, he let the trademark expire. It's his own fault. But if I'm Todd Gordon, some fucking fat New Yorker trying to trademark what I built, the fuck's this guy trademarking it? Yeah, I'd probably be pissed off too. But I abandoned it. I didn't say to him, give me $1,000, I'll give it to you. I was just more like, man, shove it up your ass. That's how I felt about it at the time. But no, Todd Gordon deserves a lot of respect for what he did for ECW. A lot of controversy towards the end of his involvement, but, you know, let's see what he says in his book. Benjamin, I really believe LA Knight will have a moment at SummerSlam. WWE obviously fucking with us a little bit too much. But I think he's going to have a moment. And let's see what that moment is. By process of elimination, the United States Championship is the only one. Unless he challenges Dominic and takes the North American Championship. Nah, I don't want to see that. Michael is asking, is there any truth to the Bray Wyatt Cody Rhodes feud rumors, or is it BS? That's something I will be talking about on Monday's show. I will tell you this. It was just yesterday that we had a fun conversation of all these dick wrestling news websites that every month or two, Bray Wyatt is nearing a return, and then it doesn't happen. And then a month later, Bray Wyatt is nearing a return, and it did not. As soon as I finished my show yesterday, 2 or 3 hours later, I got hit with DMs. DT, you know, look at this person report. No DQ and all these others. Oh, Bray Wyatt near a return. I'm like, yeah, you could see it a mile away. By process of elimination, nobody has a fucking clue who Cody Rhodes is going to feud with next. So people are like, oh, you got to be Bray Wyatt. And Bray Wyatt returns and attacks Cody. Yeah. So that's where that came from. Let me make this clear. No one in the wrestling news world will contest this. There is no one in the wrestling news world right now that are buddy-buddy with Cody or buddy-buddy with WWE Creative or buddy-buddy with Bray Wyatt that they're going to turn around and tell him, don't say anything. I'm going to be returning and I'm going to feud with Cody Rhodes. Or I'm going to feud with Bray Wyatt. They're not. These are people that are like, Cody, you're going to feud with next. You're going to get Brock Cody for. So they think, oh, I get it. Bray Wyatt. That's where that's coming from. And they could be right. They could be right. And listen, if they're right, good guess. Accurate reporting, no. Good guess, yes. A lot of these people guess. You see these Zero News and the Boozers, they guess. That's all they do is they guess. And it's not that hard. You know, when we predict things, even when I joked last week, I said, I think Rey Mysterio might end up taking on Santos. Like, it's not that hard to like figure out some of this stuff. It's just sometimes you hold out hope that WWE will do what the fans want, not necessarily what they think, but the guess. When they guess right, oh, I'm accurate news, pay me money. No, they guessed. They didn't report it accurate. MJ with a 5 spot. Thank you, MJ. MJ says, Now we know how awful Vince McMahon's creative ideas are. Do I look back and give more credit to Vince Russo for the Attitude Era? Love the show, by the way. Thank you, MJ. Thank you for the five spot. I've always been a fan of Vince Russo, going back to the 90s. But Vince Russo has definitely made a lot of mistakes in wrestling. No doubt. The thing is, though, is, you know, I brought this up not too long ago. Blame Russo. That was something you would hear in TNA all the time back in the day. Blame Russo. Blame Russo. And the thing is that you'd find out later that, no, Vince Russo had nothing to do with that storyline. Oh, no, Vince Russo had nothing to do with that. Oh, no, that he had nothing to do with this. Was he innocent? No. He definitely had his share of things that didn't work out. But he had his share of things that did work out. And Vince Russo, this is the best way I could say it. Vince Russo, for me, came around at a time where he saw the Jerry Springers, the Girls Gone Wild, the Married with Children's, the Beavis and Buttheads, the, you know, late night, you know, like the videos of, you know, women fighting and this, and, you know, Ultimate Fighting and going against your boss. And when WWE decided to start going Attitude, he saw all of the clusterfuck adult things going around and put it into wrestling. And for, you know, a lot of people, you know, they got pissed off by it. For some others, they thought it was great. The problem is, and this is what Vince McMahon's problem is right now, when you get a little success, you kind of try to ride that a little bit too far, or you want to see how far you could go. And WWE's doing that right now with LA Knight. We talked about it yesterday. You know, WWE took LA Knight, and they're going from giving us blue balls to pissing us off. You know, I've joked about it for a month. I know there's a lot of podcasts that have only figured it out now, but I said a month ago, I said, whether you like it or not, think about it in WWE Creative's ideas. His shirts are selling crazy. He's getting huge pops. This is a month ago. We must be doing something right. Right? Whether you like it or not, if you're WWE Creative and you see what's happening with LA Knight, why would you change it? The problem is that Vince doesn't know when to say when. He wants to see how many extra times he could fuck with people. Then he'll pull back. And that's when LA Knight will get that success. Right now, whether you like it or not, LA Knight has no streak of wins on TV, that he's got momentum, that, hey, he could become... People just want him to become champion because they like him. He beat Rey Mysterio, but he has no momentum in the ring. People don't want to wait anymore. That's their problem. People don't want to wait for LA Knight to have, hey, he's won like his last seven matches, or he's undefeated in the last 2 months. No, they just want him to win because they like him. So Vince McMahon, guy has done a hell of a lot of good as far as what we have gotten for entertainment over the years. But in a lot of years, some of it is outdated. Some of it, that formula doesn't work anymore. Not all of it's bad. You know, not all of it's bad. Trust me, I don't think, you know, did anybody ever decide to find out who came up with the bloodline idea? Whose idea was it to do all this? I mean, again, if COVID doesn't exist, I don't know if this bloodline that we have now ever happens. Because the fans live instead of screens, and it's kind of ironic that I opened up the show showing a little vintage deli man. He's chilling over there. I still got my salami. This is the actual salami you saw at the beginning of the show. Vince doesn't, you know, he tries to stretch it. And Triple H is doing that too right now. You know, notice how everybody's silent because they don't know if they should start ripping Triple H or not. But yeah, Triple H has been part of the McMahon regime since the 90s. Why people still want to convince you that Triple H is anything different than Vince McMahon, Yeah, he's got some different creative ideas, but at the end of the day, he's part of the McMahon machine for decades. So, you know, he definitely deserves criticism now. Absolutely. I don't deny that at all. But I won't take away the fact that Vince McMahon has had a lot of success. Dream is asking, do I like Starbucks? No. Too expensive? I make some pretty damn good coffee at home, man. You whip out a V60 and you pour over and you have the right beans. Believe it or not, I mean, I'm not going to take it out now. Here's a little behind the scenes for people that don't know. This right here is a food freezer. It's just, I have a black canvas over it, so it looks like the room is just dark. Inside that freezer are a bunch of little bags of coffee that I actually sealed and, you know, took the air out and, you know, just separated it. And every couple of days, I take a bag out of the thing, I warm it up, I grind my own beans. And depending on, you know, the mood I'm in or if I have time, I'll do an AeroPress or a V60 or, you know, whatever. But Starbucks, I can make good coffee. And anybody could make good coffee at home. All right. We're going to wrap this up in 7 minutes because we've already done an hour and 20. I don't want to overload anyone. We had a phenomenal show yesterday. Everything was hit on all cylinders. Yesterday's show is, trust me, it's one that you definitely want to tune into. By the way, this is just a temporary banner. But yeah, August 1st, Kevin and I will be doing a preview and predictions for SummerSlam. So you can mark that down. That will be happening. And if you're not doing anything tomorrow night, we go about 75 minutes on average. But right after Raw tomorrow, we have the post-Raw show. We will definitely recap Raw. Tomorrow, we got two face-to-faces and a contract signing. It's a little bit, we might even have two contract signings and two face-to-faces. Probably not with Becky and Trish because Becky will beat Zoe Stark. And then the following week, there'll probably be a contract signing. But tomorrow, contract signing between Seth and Finn Balor, face-to-face Ricochet and Logan Paul, and face-to-face with Drew McIntyre and Gunther. Casey is Raw, celebrating 18 months as a member of the family, a.k.a. channel member. He is a member of the family. Casey, thank you for 18 months of support. Thank you for always supporting the DTKC show. You know, we're having fun doing it. You know, we don't want to overload it. So, you know, a week from Tuesday is when we return, and we'll do preview and predictions SummerSlam. That's going to be a good one. That card is going to be loaded. It's going to be loaded. Just want to see what they're going to do with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. I want to see what they're going to do with those two guys because that's hasn't been discussed yet. I don't know if I want to see Dominic Mysterio and Damian Priest in a rematch. I wonder if we get something on SmackDown or I don't know. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Let's see what happens on Raw. Maybe we'll get a little bit of clarity tomorrow. Maybe it'll be an open challenge. Maybe it'll be a fatal four-way at SummerSlam. There was no Wednesday Night Dynamite this week because Kevin and I did a loaded show the night before. So doing that many shows in that shorter time, it was too much. I kind of mentioned it on Tuesday also that I didn't think there was going to be a Wednesday Night Dynamite. But this week it will return. This week it'll definitely return. So, I like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, but if they lose at least one set of those titles right now, their run would not be a failure. Something that we've talked about, and I think we had the conversation yesterday too, that, you know, WWE's gotten into this habit of people having long runs. Bayley, Roman Reigns, the Usos, Gunther, Rhea Ripley is going to be on one for a while. Seth is not dropping it anytime soon right now. You know, so you got some long runs. And then what happens is somebody only holds it for 4 or 5 months, it feels like, oh, they didn't have really a really good run. And that is the byproduct of doing what they're doing. But, you know, you got to strike while the iron is hot. Who that team is, I'm not sure. Could be Street Profits. I don't know. When Matt is asking, when do I think Kevin Owens will turn on Sami Zayn? Not anytime soon. People think that there's this fallout coming. The storyline last year took so long with the bloodline and Kevin Owens trying to get through Sami and Sami not listening. And then Sami finally realizes it. And Kevin Owens is hurt over it. Then they reunite and it was a tearful moment for a lot of people. You don't just throw that away 5 months after WrestleMania. So no, I don't think you split them up yet. There's no need to. Plus, when you think of tag teams, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, they complement each other really, really well. There's no reason to split them up right now. If there is a reason, if you force me to give you a reason, it's the lack of tag teams feuding with them. And I know we brought that up yesterday between Alpha Academy and the Viking Raiders and in this year. I don't think any of those three teams should be going for titles right now. So Larry says, this is a good one. This is one of the fun ways to start closing out the show tonight. Larry, for people that follow this YouTube channel, Larry Jester says, is it just him that does Sami Zayn look like Rhett from Good Mythical Morning? Couldn't think of anything else to say, and cancer sucks. I agree with you. I always thought that Rhett always reminded me of Edge, especially when he had his hair pasted back a little bit. He reminded me more of Edge than Sami Zayn, but I get where you're going with that. I get into moods with that channel. I never knew about Good Mythical Morning. And what is it, Ear Biscuits is their podcast? I didn't even know about them until about maybe 9 months ago. And they popped up on my feed and I watched it. And they were eating like a lot of foods and everything and testing things out. And I thought it was pretty cool. And then, you know, I saw a little bit of their podcast and I'm like, all right, it's pretty good. But then I get bored of it and I don't tune in for a couple of months and then I go back. But yeah, we got a couple of Good Mythical Morning fans tuning in. They're good. The funny thing about their channel is this. You know, and I'm not joking when I say this. Like, when they test things, like, I remember not too long ago, they were testing Coke. And they drank it out of a plastic bottle, a glass bottle, a can, and maybe something else. And, you know, like it ended up like I thought glass bottled Coke was the tastiest Coke. And for them, I think can was. And they would do things like that. They would test like different types of frozen whatever, egg rolls or chicken fingers. And I was like, I was thinking outside the box, I'm like, oh, they should do an episode with ketchup packets. Lo and behold, I checked their fucking channel. Motherfuckers did a segment on ketchup. You know, like, you try to, like, come up with ones that they may not have come up with, and they do. But it's a fun little channel. And I never realized they were around that long. If you've never seen their first ever episode, it's worth. You know who I watched, too? Even though I feel bad for the guy. Let's see. Who gets the shout-out? I've never in my lifetime ever impersonated him. And I guarantee you what I'm about to do is not going to sound or look like him at all. Trust me, I'm about three times the size of the guy. But who out there knows the channel when I go like this? Hello, everyone. This is Running on Empty Food Reviews. And who knows? Come on, who knows who that is? I am your host, the Report of the Week. Bottled water going in. One more sip. Yes. Dream 101, Filthy Agent, the Report of the Week. Yep, the Report of the Week. He's a good kid. And you know why I say kid? He's only in his early 20s. I mean, that was kind of like blew me away, because when I saw his some of his older videos, he was a teenager. And you add it up, I think he must be, what, 24? And he gets made fun of. That guy gets bullied. Like, I mean, you look at some of the Reddit pages, he gets bullied. Anybody out there, just look up Review Brah, B-R-A-H, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But he makes so much money. Oh, my God. When he gets videos, he's smart, but he's too good of a person. And what I mean by that is all he's got to do is do a video like reading nasty comments about me. He'll get 1 million views out of it. That is some pretty hefty due to YouTube money. This guy gets hundreds of thousands of views. I mean, and to tell you the truth, you know, he does a podcast too. It's not every week, but he does 3, 4, 5 hour shows. And it's pretty wild. I mean, you know, I watch his reviews. I mean, 99% of the stuff that he reviews, I don't buy. But, you know, he comes off as a good guy. I can't say anything bad about him. And, you know, he, if he wanted to, could make even more money. But I'm happy that he gets the revenue that he gets, because that's a guy that, you know, came up with, let me review a 5-hour energy. Hello, everyone. This is Grape 5-hour energy. It tastes like grape. 300,000 views. Because he looks like he does. I almost said he looks like an alien, but I don't want to. I can't make fun of the guy. I feel bad for the abuse that he gets, but he's got thick skin. He's got thick skin. You have to have thick skin when you do shit. You have to have thick skin. There's a lot of people that don't. All right, let's get out of here in like 2-3 minutes. Chaos. Do I ever watch Chaos Corner? Sure. I see when you go on once in a while. The problem is, and it, for me, and this is no joke, like when I'm not doing the shows, either I'm doing stuff around the house or I'm doing insurance work or I try to spend some time with my wife. I got stuff going on with my family. So, you know, my times are a little bit scattered. So sometimes like I'll be doing insurance work and I'll have my Twitter feed in the background. And it'll be like, oh, I'm going to do a Chaos Corner tonight. And it's like, I want to like mingle and interact, but I always got shit going on. I feel like that's why when I'm going away from September 1st to September 9th, like I'm bringing my computer with me because I expect I'm going to have to do some work. But I'm going to feel kind of like weird, like not doing shows. Even when I went on my honeymoon last year, it felt different. You know, not doing shows. But, for everyone out there, Guardian of Chaos, who moderates it, and he's more than a moderator, obviously. Legend in Northeast with wrestling, too. You know, he does his little chaos. Well, I shouldn't say little, but he does his Chaos Corner. And he rants and, you know, does a lot of videos and discussions. You all should check it out. You know, it's very, very opinionated. And that's something that I appreciate, even if I disagree with people out there. You know, unfortunately for some, you know, the being opinionated becomes an act. You know, I've said this to JD before. You know, you look around, there's a lot of wannabe JDs out there, and there's a couple in particular that their Twitter channel was very, very plain for years, and then all of a sudden, they literally almost copied word for word everything that JD wrote on his Twitter, right down to capitalizing certain words. And, you know, when you don't feel it here, whether you agree with people out there or not, if you don't feel it here, there's only so long that you could keep up the act. And there was a lot of people that realized, oh, fuck Vince McMahon. And they thought, oh, I'm going to be an instant success. Thousands of likes, tens of thousands of views, revenue money. Let me just say, fuck Vince McMahon. And after a while, you realize, you know, people get a little sick of it. And then what are you left with? So there's a lot of fake out there. Yeah. Chaos says it's a stress reliever for him. It's a stress reliever for me. You know, there's a couple of things going on here personally. Even something going on right now with the shows that I can't bring publicly. No, it has nothing to do with Kevin. I don't want anybody to think there's no issues there. There's something going on that, you know, I'm having a little bit of a problem behind the scenes that I'm trying to avoid having to, like, stir some shit up. Hopefully doesn't get to that point. But, you know, you deal with everyday stuff, even in my line of work with the economy, getting customers left and right canceling because they just can't afford insurance right now and they're taking risks. And it hurts my bottom line. And I got friends that lost their careers because of this current economy. And these shows are a little bit of a stress reliever for me as well. What sucks about it is once I get the show up and I'm done, like, that's when the stress kicks in again. And you realize you got to combat it. You got to attack it. Because if you just ignore it and be like, oh, it'll go away on its own, it just builds up and builds up and builds up, and then it bites you in the ass when you least expect it. So that's why, believe me, guys, I know a lot of the shows out there from various people are an escape. But if you got shit going on in your backyard, you got to confront it, man. Because if you just ignore it and think, oh, it'll just go away on its own, it'll calm down, it'll appease, believe me, I tell you, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't. It just builds and builds and builds. Then it hits you when you least expect it and it overwhelms the fuck out of you. Because that's happened to me many times over the years. It's just that, you know, I usually don't bring it publicly, you know, because it's not that it's no one's business, but you look at it and you'd be like, I got my own problems. The fuck do I need to hear his? You know, so just a little piece of advice. So, guys, I'm out of here. Hope you enjoyed this show. Great episode. I will add up everything that we received today and yesterday and tomorrow. I will put it on that GoFundMe. I'll take a screenshot too for anyone out there that may want to see evidence of it. But I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. Feel free to post a comment afterwards, any feedback from what we discussed tonight. And if you're around tomorrow night after Raw, you're welcome to join me live, 11.05 p.m. Eastern, or check it out on the archive. And don't forget, DonTony.com. That website, the audio shows, as much as I love doing video, those audio shows are the lifeline of what I do here. About 90% of the audience access audio only. Who needs to see this fat face for 90 minutes? You're sitting at home, you're relaxing, you got your eyes closed, you're working, you're doing a little treadmill, you're driving. That's where people tune into the shows. You don't need to look. You know, so the audio, download those audio episodes. You know, believe me, I've had so many people say to me, DT, if you just focus on audio only, you'll be in the top 15 every week. But you're dividing it up from this and this and this. You know, as long as everybody's enjoying the shows, that's what matters at the end of the day. You know, it's fun to be in the top 50 all the time. And yes, it would be more fun to be in the top 25. But, you know, if it's divided amongst different formats, it's good. As long as the bills are in some ways taken care of, that's what matters. And as long as everybody is happy, that's what's top of the list. So, my friends, I am out of here. Be well. Catch you all again soon.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You would always like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now? Now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.